don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You're tuned to Community Radio 2XX98.3 FM, and this is Radio Freedom Anarchy on the airwaves. Apologies for anyone who was didn't appreciate that last bit. I thought it was rather amusing and thought I might share it with you. My name's Stephen. I'll be around till about midday today. James should hopefully be popping in a bit later to lend a hand too. But what is anarchy all about? Well, an anarchist society is a non-hierarchical society in which all people have equal access to the decision-making processes in that society and equal access to society's wealth. On today's program, well, May Day has just passed, so later on we will be giving a very quick roundup of May Day sort of events around the world, and plus a history of May Day. The historical origins of May Day are very much anarchist and are very much rooted in the everyday struggles of the working class, not the great military fests that used to happen in certain countries in the world, and not just the sort of pathetic little things that certain union bureaucrats pass off today as being a May Day celebration. But to start off with today, we will cross via the community radio satellite to the studios of 3CR in Melbourne to Joe Toscano and the Anarchist World this week.
$400 a week, 37.5 cents an hour increase. I'm sure Lachlan would be celebrating your 37.5 cents an hour increase. Everybody seemed to have been happy. The Industrialisation Commission has given those people in the lowest paid workforce an increase of $15 a week, a whole $15 a week.
That doesn't include the unemployed, though, does it? Or does it?
No.
I didn't think so.
Well, look, Lachlan, we don't care about the unemployed in this program. You care about
Obviously the unemployed.
You go somewhere else. 37.57 cents an hour, so I'll be talking about that. You know what the minimum wage is today if you actually put in 40 hours of honest labour, Lock?
$250.
No, that's the dull one. No, it's about $180. No, it's $400 a week. $400 a week. Now, I would like to see Mr. John Howard, the leader of the opposition, Mr. Pratt, Mr. Packer, Mr. Murdoch, the CEOs in this country, bringing up a family on $400 a week. Could you imagine the outcry? Instead of having these buffoons from employer organisations across the country clapping their hands and saying, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. We can't afford an extra $15 a week for workers on the minimum pay rates. We can't afford to pay them $400 a week gross, before taxation, before superannuation, before union fees. That's gross. We can't afford to give them $365 in their hands at the end of the week. We cannot afford this. And the government, those great people who rode on the back of the battler, surfed on the back of the battler into power, said, well, we think they should have only had $7.50 a week. That's right. $15 is way too much. Way too much. And the weak knee trade union movement says, well, $15, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. We wanted $24, but we got $15, so we're happy. So at the end of the day, you've all been diddled. Think about it. Try to raise a family on $400 a week gross, $365 a week take-home pay, irrespective of the government's family allowances. Because in this country, I mean, we may talk about people on social security benefits on the dole having a bad trot, which they do, but in this country we have a whole new subsection, the working poor. We have people in this country who work 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week. At the end of the week, they can't meet their bills. No, no, they can't fly to Bali, no, 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 or Rome, but they can't meet their bills, their rent, their mortgage, their electricity, their telephone, their food bill, their school fees. That's right, school fees. Because if you send children to public schools, you know there are many, many school fees. So what does this $15 a week do for the working poor in this country? Very little. Very little. Because at the end of the day, we know that unless there is radical social change, that unless wages are pushed up for everybody, that unless all wealth is held in common, we will still see the ridiculous situation of some people earning $400 an hour. That's right, an hour. Because they do something supposedly productive, and other people earning $400 a week. So I don't think many workers in this country, or people on the dole, or people on social security benefits have been sucked in by the hype rounding the national wage case. But what I really found offensive is the employer representatives who said, well, it's a bit of an anachronism, this centralised wage fixing. We'd like to see workshop bargaining, workshop by workshop by workshop. Could you imagine at the end of the day going up and saying, excuse me, Mr. Packer, look, I work in your factory down the road and I take home $375 a week and I'd like a pay increase of 10% and equal bargaining. That's what they're into about. They're not into collective bargaining. It's one good thing that I've seen in the last few days or the last few weeks is the metal workers' unions across this country actually going back to our centralised bargaining, collective bargaining. They're saying all the shops in together, at the end of the day, it's not just the strong shops that actually win pay rises, but that all workers within the metal workers union within will win pay rises. And it's interesting to see that the government and employers are shitting themselves about this because they're concerned about the workers' collective strength. Lachlan.
Yes, Joe. Hey, how are you?
I know you're thinking about your own program. And
I'm paying attention. I am.
You've got to pay attention. Are you an expert on cooling towers and Legionnaires' disease?
No, but I do hope John Howard comes down with it, don't you?
Really? No, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Wouldn't you?
You know, it's an unpleasant thing, you know, Legionnaires' disease. Very unpleasant.
Yeah, it's cramps and sweats and death and
yeah,
sounds horrible.
Very exceptionally unpleasant disease. But, see, a lot of people don't understand. This is the beauty about the modern mass media. It really doesn't tell us much at the end of the day. We know there are 60 diagnosed cases and there may be hundreds more to be diagnosed. People think that it may be coming from the Melbourne Aquarium, but maybe it's coming from Crown Casino in Melbourne. Maybe it's coming from a work site next door. But what interests me about this whole business is the fact that in Victoria and most other states in this country, it's all based on self-regulation. Now, there are 10,000 cooling towers in Victoria. At any time in the week, there is a number of them which have Legionnaires' bacteria. And if you keep your ears to the what's happening in this fair city, in the fair city of Melbourne or other cities across Australia, you'll know that almost every day there are outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease. There may be one victim, two victims, three victims. There may not be a mass epidemic. But at the end of the day, there's really no regulation which forces people who have cooling towers and use air conditioning in large settings like an aquarium or a factory to actually maintain that. And more importantly, even if they do maintain it, it's maintained by a private corporation, which at the end of the day, basically, you know, it's not that interested in going through all the motions, because if you go through all the motions, the fact that it costs you a lot to find out. So, you know,
but surely killing off their consumer base can't be good.
Yes, but you don't kill off your consumer base, you frighten it off. The thing is, expenses, Lachlan. I know you're not versed in the ways of business, but business is very hard. You've got to make a buck at the end of the day. So you've got to cut corners. That's the beauty about self-regulation. When you've got self-regulation, you can cut corners. And in 99% of the time, it doesn't affect the consumer base. But occasionally you get a gastroenteritis outbreak and people die from eating their pork bun rolls.
Or you get a Bhopal.
Yep, or a Bhopal.
Or a Chernobyl.
Or a Chernobyl. That's a little bit
little bit extra. We don't get those things in Australia. That's what they keep telling us. But the thing is, we have 10,000 cooling towers in Melbourne. There is no fee to register a cooling tower. So instead of having self-regulation and private corporations doing this, simply you could put a levy. Levy on a, you have a cooling tower. You're not going to use air for air conditioning. You're going to put the air through water in a cooling tower, right? It's cheaper to do it that way. Well, you're charged. Every year there is a charge. And from that charge, you have a set of government inspectors who go around who don't rely on the private operator for their business. Because if you're a private operator and you're doing private maintenance checks and you tell the boss, well, look, you may have Legionnaire's disease, they'll just tell you to shut up. But, and the important thing is that if you've got something like that, which we had here in this state 10 years ago, the consequences of Legionnaire's disease breaking out every day would be a decrease quite markedly. I mean, that's the beauty of having some type of state... I know this sounds terrible, Lachlan, but an anarchist calling for state intervention, but having some type of state apparatus which actually supervises the private sector, because isn't the state there to protect the interests of the people? Isn't it theoretically there to protect our interests? Now, if it doesn't protect our interests...
So it's there to protect us from business. Is that
that's
what
right. That's government? Right. Well, that's what they tell us. They say...
No, they don't say that at all. They're there to protect us from ourselves.
Yes, well, that's also part of, if you look at what happens around the world. But they keep telling us it's there to protect us. It's there to distribute tax. It's there to be good to us. So, look, if it's there to be good to us, why don't they just charge these bastards, have a proper group of people going around, doing tests, doing maintenance. At the end of the day, the public knows the tests that have been done have been done dinky dye tests, and they have some... you know, they're not concerned about their safety. I mean, it's terrible, isn't it? You line up to go to an aquarium to watch some prisoner fish, and what happens? What happens? You get Legionnaire's disease. You go down and buy pork bun.
And those old people, it was their big day out for the year.
That's
too.
Right.
Look
yeah,
what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're laughing, but it's a epidemic.
I'm not laughing, Joe. You might be laughing, mate.
Epidemics. Now, epidemics is a serious community matter, and why are they occurring? Why are they occurring? Did you know that...
There's too many of us.
Yeah.
That's why it's occurring.
No, not too many. That's the type of Ned. That's the type of shit Ned Ludd talks about. You know, he'd like.
No,
to
we're a parasite species. We've reached the end of our line.
No, we've just started, mate. You've got no idea. We've just started. So look, I'm quite concerned about the Legionnaires outbreak. I'm quite concerned about the gastroenteritis outbreaks. I'm quite concerned about what's happening in our community. And the thing is that what concerns me is self-regulation is the name of the game. The governments. Various governments at state level, local council level and federal level have washed their hands of the whole thing and said, look, it's up to business to regulate themselves. We trust business. They'll do the right thing by their consumers and everything will be all right. But we all forget the bottom line, which is to make a profit. And to make a profit, you know, you take shortcuts. That's life. That's the way it is.
Now, if you're considering that business has never done the right thing, how long does it take them to get the point that business is not going to do the right thing?
People being ill or dying, and then maybe the fascinating thing about the state government, Labor government's response in Victoria is, no, we don't need a special inquiry into this. A coroner's court will deal with it. Because they know that this is a potential explosive situation. There are 10,000 cooling towers in this city. There are outbreaks of Legionnaire's disease almost every day in this city and cities across Australia. The outbreak, the last big outbreak was in 1987 in Wollongong, where 10 people died from a 44 infected. You're going to see the incubation period for the little bug to come out is 43 days. You're going to see possibly hundreds more people come down with Legionnaire's disease, which puts a strain on the public hospital sector, which means people who are waiting for elective surgery can't come in for elective surgery. So the ramifications are quite severe. And for the state government to say, well, we shouldn't have an inquiry into this, well, it's about time there was an inquiry and there was a mechanism via which things were checked. All right. Now, I understand that one of our special guests, Mr. Ned Ludd, has actually walked into the studio locked in. Can you see him? Or can you smell him?
He's in the distant corner. There he is.
Yeah,
he's over there.
He's dead, you know.
I'll just pass the binoculars.
Yeah, I didn't actually walk in. I dragged myself in.
Legionnaire's disease, was it?
No.
Gastro food poisoning, cholera.
a much older disease, AIDS.
AIDS. I mean, cholera was the big thing in your days, wasn't it?
Oh, well, it was one of the big things, yes.
It was the plague or the Black Death or something.
Well, no, that was the 14th century. He's a 19th century man, aren't
that's
you,
right. And I like to remind people that the reason why people live longer nowadays is not because of high-tech medicine, but because of sewerage.
Well, that's right. Did you know that in every major city in Australia, that when summer came, the vapours rose from the lower ends of town? That's where the poor lived. Well, the working people lived. They lived in the gullies. And cholera was a yearly epidemic, which used to take out hundreds of children and hundreds of adults all across Australia in the 1880s, 1819, 1900. And it wasn't until the great sewage networks were set up, as Ned Ludd said, that that scourge was wiped off the face of the universe. Now, Ned, what are you talking about today?
I'm continuing talking about what you started off with, and that is all these things that are happening now, all these disasters, a lot of which actually didn't happen before.
We've done the disaster one.
Everything in the capitalist system is a disaster, but apart from that, amongst those background disasters.
Now, I've noticed that all these people who are fighting against globalisation have been termed Luddites. What do you think about this, Ned?
Well, good luck to them. I mean, look, it was just like the old communists. It was always the communists who were fighting for the workers. Well, good thing somebody had to fight for the
workers. Well, it's changed, isn't it? The communists are now dead as the anarchists are at the forefront of social struggle.
That's
you
right.
You may have seen, Ned. So what's who's Ned Ludd and why do you come in once
well,
a month?
Well, Ned Ludd lived in what is now the second last century, and that was in the early 1800s, he managed to rouse up the workers, or so they said, to go out and smash some machinery, very specialised machinery in the textile factories.
Bloody Luddites.
Yes. And these workers, for some reason, objected to the fact that they were being taken out of work or put out of work because somebody wanted to install machines which... No, sorry, they didn't want to install machines. They were using old machines which were turning out shoddy goods. And the workers felt that the working class itself was doubly disadvantaged, firstly by losing jobs and secondly by getting shoddy goods. So he was the mythical leader. Nobody knows whether Ned Ludd ever existed because there are no records as to what the organisation...
They were hung, weren't they?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, that's what you... Nothing like a good public hanging,
that's
I reckon.
That's right.
How come no one goes forth and smashes computers these days?
Well, they've all been talked into that being very beneficial to people. And nobody questions when everybody says it's beneficial, it must be beneficial. And it's the same as the rest of the system, you know, when they tell you that the economy has never been so good, they don't mean you and me, they mean the rich. And in fact, the definition of an economy...
Come on, Ned, come on, what are we talking about?
I'm talking about the reason why disasters are now occurring in areas where they didn't occur before.
God's punishment for our ways, that's all it is, Ned.
No, I think it's a special phase of capitalism.
And God's punishment.
Well, yes, it's... What sort of evil have we done now? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? But now, in the recent months, we've had a whole heap of things that seem very odd. For instance, why do aeroplanes collapse on the tarmac? Now, these are the same aeroplanes that didn't collapse on the tarmac before. And these are by no means minor things. The legs that collapsed on that Qantas plane are actually directly below the fuel tanks, 30 tonnes of fuel. If they had collapsed a bit further, or if indeed it hadn't happened at the beginning of a runway but at the end of it, it would have been quite possible for that fuel to be set alight and with all the people incinerated. And of course, nowadays, when planes hold hundreds of people, each one of those things is a terrific disaster. So the question is this: why is it now that the system has actually turned much worse than it was before. And I don't think the explanation, well, that's capitalism, is good enough, because it was capitalism 30 years ago as well. Now, it's always talked about being cost-cutting. Well, how much of the operating costs of an airline actually go into maintenance? Nobody asks those questions. Now, I guarantee if you compare the advertising costs of some of these exercises with the maintenance cost and the mechanics that are necessary to keep the planes in order, you'll find it's minute, that basically the maintenance is just not an important item in the balance sheet.
You never hear of huge sackings in the advertising industry, do you?
No, you never.
I wonder why that is.
Nor do you hear.
Well, you need the advertising industry, Lachlan. How can you sell things without that? Oh, you're dumb.
Well, you know, now this is the problem that you raised, that there used to be a lot of government inspectors in the aircraft industry too, and basically, I mean, I used to work as a young man, young boy in the industry, and we used to have these inspectors coming in once every 2 years, and usually they asked for the boss at the front door, and the boss usually came up with an interesting product which they took away with them, and that was the extent of their inspection of the factory. Now, I'm not saying that inspectors are therefore the be-all and end-all, but certainly the system was in place, and the system is important, because it's not only that the inspector comes around, it's the fact that the bosses have to consider what would happen if they did come around and found that things weren't as good as they should be.
But they just wheel out the one working aeroplane and leave the rest back in the shed.
Well, that's right. Unfortunately, in this case, they all had people in them, so they couldn't wheel them into the shed. But the question is really, why is this happening? And of course, there are no simple answers, but there has to be some sort of an explanation. And I'd like to offer just a few of them, but one of them, of course, is, as always, management. But management is not the sort of place nowadays where people analyse what needs to be done. Management is the place where people who have absolutely no understanding of a particular industry make decisions, just so that they're seen to make the decisions. And the first thing that comes into the minds of people nowadays in management is not how to expand the business, but how to cut costs. Now, the whole of industry for the last 20-odd years has been not about expansion, but about contraction, about cutting costs. Look at BHP, you know.
You mean downsizing.
Downsizing, but also actually sloughing off excellent enterprises.
Killing the corporate memory.
Memory.
So you're suggesting they've got corporate amnesia.
Yes, they have. And what's more, nobody gets sacked for that. Now, I think they should be transported into the proper institutions where they can keep on talking to each other about how great it is when they can get in and cut the last worker from the shop floor, or, in this case, the last mechanic from the maintenance shop.
So that's one point. What's the next reason, you think?
Well, the next reason, I think, is the strangely enough, I would say the demise of the Soviet Union.
We have some very strange guests, Lachlan. The demise of the demise of a semi-Stalinist state. All right, tell us this one, Ned.
Well, look,
I'm waiting with bated breath.
It wasn't what the Soviet Union did. It was
what they represented.
Yes, precisely what the bosses in capitalist countries thought the Soviet Union represented. It was actually the fear of an alternative.
So you think there should be competition in political ideology and philosophies.
Well,
there is. That's why anarchism has come to the fore.
Right, you should get Mr. Fells onto that. There should be more competition.
More competition.
Well, I mean, I'm
the third major party.
Well, we had one. Look what they did to the poor Hansonites. It was disgusting.
Yes, well, that's how it goes. That, in fact, now they're on their own.
Well, you realise that in Australia, if you actually are stupid enough to vote, that in a state or federal election, your vote eventually either goes to the Labor Party or Liberal Party. End of story.
Well, that's very well arranged.
Okay. So, all right, that's the second one.
No accident.
The loss of alternatives. So capitalism has triumphed, therefore it doesn't have to worry about what mum thinks. All
that's right.
What's next? What's the next
point?
Well,
because of that, it doesn't have to be efficient. Because basically, as long as all the companies in a particular line of business are equally inefficient, well, that's what it is, isn't it? I mean, you can't say that the system is efficient, can you?
Well, you know, it's efficient at some things.
Yeah, but it's not even efficient at exploitation.
Well, thank the Lord for that.
Right, but I mean,
thank your holiness.
What I'm saying is that the advanced capitalist countries are actually stagnating.
Right.
They're stagnating for lack of a threat, a credible threat.
Now, there's a credible threat in the wings. I can understand the anarchist movement will be a credible threat.
Sure, but until
we've got that competition, you think they're going to run riot?
I'm absolutely convinced. Yeah. I mean, they're doing things now that they never did before. I mean, the system 30 years ago, 20 years ago, was running reasonably well in the rich countries. It wasn't running well in the poor countries. But now we're at a stage where they really don't know what to do, because all of management in the world in large companies are financial managements. They see themselves as not increasing their markets, but as fighting around how they can improve their personal position. I mean, look at these CEOs now. The amounts of money which they manage to rip off their companies is obscene. Now, that wouldn't have been possible 30 years ago.
No, they don't rip it off their companies, Ned. They're given the money for services, for increasing profitability.
Well, yes.
That's the theory, but it doesn't happen. Sometimes they're given money to get rid of. The old golden handshake.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty
what
of
I
it.
Call the AMP syndrome.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying now. You've got short-term financial management. The shareholders are no longer the sort of people who are interested in the long-term success of the company. They're by and large speculators.
You mean they don't identify with the company?
What's there to identify with?
They just want to make a buck. I mean, that's what capitalism is about. You want to make a buck.
Yes, but In the old days.
Look at this, Lachlan. The old days. Ned's talking about the old days when they had cholera, when they had capital punishment, when they had.
They didn't want to make a buck then. They wanted an enlightened state.
But I'm talking about the technology of the old days. And in the old days, it was understood that you had to improve your processes. You had to do all sorts of things in order to keep your company healthy.
You mean you had to produce a product to make a profit?
Yes, even that.
Yeah. These days, you know, it's just the potential.
No dot-com business.
No, it's potential to make a profit.
That's right. Yeah. Or the potential to send the share price up. And nobody checks them. I mean, all the people who sit around the board table are all of the same ilk.
But they're honest men and women, mainly men. Don't you trust the people who the captains of industry?
I do trust them to do the worst thing possible. And this is exactly what's happening. We're seeing the thing that if you sent a company, a billion-dollar company, down the drain, you were expected to jump out the top floor window.
Now you get a job on another board, don't
another
you?
Another board, and they've made the windows jump-proof, so that even if somebody had the urge to do that, they can't do it anymore.
So, Nettie, have you got any solutions?
Well, I think...
I mean, you come in here and criticise every month.
Well, I mean,
I'm not
criticising the alternatives. I'm criticising what there is. And right. There's just so much to criticise that it's kept me going for all these months. But the point is really that I think capitalism is going bad. Now, you can't expect that because it goes bad, it'll go away. That was the old idea, that it'll just collapse because of its inefficiencies, of its brutalities and so forth. But it doesn't work that way. I mean, they've got the power. And that's one of the things that I was saying, that the absence of a credible alternative has been working for them. And let's face it, there are credible alternatives, but with the media completely controlled by the system, these credible alternatives are not given any sort of publicity.
But Ned, I'm a great believer in the Tina syndrome. There is no alternative. I mean, that's what we're constantly told. It's either expand, globalise, downsize, or die. I mean, there is no alternative, is there?
That's precisely it. But, I mean, the people who invent these slogans are also the same people who would not know how to keep the other system alive. They're killing it off. They're killing off so slowly, they're taking us with them.